Hello and welcome to another edition of the Conference USA podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for G5 football. This was a big and eventful week for CUSA on the field, and there is plenty to talk about. We will get to all that in just a minute. Off the top, though, do want to address two things. One, for all of our listeners who were, you know, affected by Hurricane Tropical Storm Ida in the past couple of weeks, just know that you are in our thoughts, and certainly hope that you all are safe, sound, and you know, wishing you all the best as you continue to kind of recover from that. Second of all, on this week's episode, you might notice it sounds a little different. The music's not there. Maybe sounds a little bit worse for wear. That's because I'm editing it this time around, and our usual superstar producer, Taylor Bauer, had to step out to, deal with some stuff, but, sorry about that if it doesn't sound as good, but, we know Taylor will be back, and, you're in our thoughts as well, buddy. So we'll be back soon with our usual level of quality, but until then, Joe Lundergan, Eric Henry here with you to talk all of the amazing news and notes from COSA this past week, including some big P5 wins that I'm excited to talk about, Eric.
Absolutely, Joe. That is a refreshing change from last year, in which it seems Conference USA just couldn't catch a break in relation to A, playing out of conference games, and B, when they had a chance to play Power 5 games. Yeah, we didn't fare too well as a conference, so it was a nice refreshing change to see that the Conference USA teams were able to stack up really well and get a couple of wins. And we almost had another one. We had a game that came down to 1 point, one that, you know, we'll get into that later on. And also want to echo the sentiments that you led the podcast with. First off, for those of you, you know, who are consistent listeners of the podcast, or for those of you who are just discovering our podcast, Taylor Bauer is an invaluable member of our Underdog Dynasty team. Without him, we would not sound the way we do, and our podcast, quite frankly, would not come off as professional. I see that in air quotes, for whatever level of professionalism you want to assign to Joe and I, that is strictly because of one Taylor Bauer. So I want to wish him well wishes. And also same to those who are dealing with the effects of Ida. As someone who lives in Florida, of course, Joe has spent time in Florida and in, you know, southern states. He knows that this time of year is one that I'll say this, Joe. I think it's something that, speaking for me here in Tampa, we take for granted because we haven't had a quote unquote direct hit, you know, or suffered any really major effects. You know, we get rain, we get winds, and, you know, not to be flippant, but for the past decade or so, hurricanes have just been a reason to go out and, you know, drink because the power is going to go out for a little while. But, you know, that we tend to underscore the effects of how dangerous these things are. So for everyone who is being affected and has been displaced by Ida, whether it's in the Northeast, Louisiana, et cetera, our thoughts, are with you guys. So want to echo that as well.
Well said. And hopefully, you know, we can take, or everyone can take a little solace in just the, you know, the entertainment value of the, you know, college football weekend that we had, just something to take your mind off of things for a little while. So with that, let's jump into what we saw from UAB and Jacksonville State this past Wednesday. Blazers pitch a shutout there, 31-0. Tyler Johnston really had the long ball working in this game. Honestly, Eric, this would have been a 40-plus point win for the Blazers had some of Johnston's receivers not dropped some very catchable deep passes in the first half. But UAB controlled it the whole way, had 518 total yards of offense, and ultimately did what they were supposed to do against an FCS opponent.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Joe, really quickly, not just an FCS opponent, but a very, very tough competitive FCS opponent in Jacksonville State, one that, as I mentioned in last week's podcast, defeated FIU, so they already have a history of pulling the upset against Conference USA teams. And not only that, they have an NFL prospect in Sarah Cooper at quarterback. So listen, and I think I mentioned that Josh Samuel, former Western Kentucky running back, is on that team as well. So not a, you know, team that is going to take for granted, but UAB really put together an impressive performance. I saw when I was watching that game, some of the social media reaction was, you know, the fact that the game was 0-0 after one quarter. But as you mentioned, there were some plays left on the field from the UAB receivers. But you mentioned it, Joe. The long ball was really going. And that's something that, as I've talked about, is really a staple of Bryant Vincent's offense. And I know I've kind of made a point in talking about the yards per attempt and how that kind of plays a factor in completion percentage. And that's why I am here doing this podcast. And Bryant Vincent has a coaching gig, which he's paid handsomely to run an offense, right? Tyler Johnson goes 17 of 21 for 320 yards, two touchdowns. So certainly an impressive performance. Don't know that we can expect that on a weekly basis, but overall, Joe, if they can get any semblance of that, 60, 70% of that, right? In terms of 17 for 21, what's that, 80%, shade under 80% of memory, if my quick math is correct. If Tyler Johnson's completing 65% of his passes or higher, and they're getting the running game from Jermaine Brown Jr. and Dwayne McBride, UAB is going to be right there, right? So in that case, in conjunction with their defense. So definitely good things for them to build on as they move into next week and the next opponent.
For sure. And one of the things that impressed me, in addition to Johnston's overall level of play in this game, was just the way that, you know, their running back by committee situation really seemed to be working in their favor. I know a lot of people were concerned about how they were going to replace the production that Spencer Brown brought to that offense last year. There was one other thing that was very entertaining about this game, and that was the fact that we had two longtime best friends in Bill Clark and John Grass coaching against each other. And one thing that especially tickled me about this during the broadcast was they told the story of how Coach Grass introduced Coach Clark to his wife at an O'Charley's some 20 odd years ago. And I guess the way that Coach Clark's wife tells it was he was wearing a fresh pair of acid wash jeans that he forgot to take the tag off of. And the funniest thing about it to me was, I guess she went home and told her mom, like, this is the one, like, immediately knew. And that's very silly, but a very sweet, like, suburban love story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you say suburban, I'll say a very southern love story, because it involved O'Charley's. You know, for those of our listeners who may be in different parts of the nation, of course, most of our CUSA cities, Joe, pretty much every CUSA city you think has an O'Charley's. Never mind. Miami doesn't have an O'Charley's. Boca doesn't have an O'Charley's. But outside of that, the rest of our CUSA cities have O'Charley's. So they understand that that is a very regionally unique restaurant and chain. But yeah, as you mentioned, the acid wash jeans, excuse me, easy for me to say. And you got to love the fact that he forgot to take the tag off, right? We've all pulled that move. I know I have.
The best thing about that whole thing for me was, I feel like O'Charley's got more goodwill from that one mention than Applebee's did in this whole weekend with their god-awful commercial, whatever that was, about Oreo shakes. And I have a whole rant I could go on that I was honestly probably saving for the middle segment about that damn Applebee's commercial.
Joe, neither of us need to get in trouble, because I don't know what the ramifications are of us both ranting about Applebee's, because I have strong feelings about Applebee's as well. And before you transition, Joe, just, you know, a quick shot to one of our listeners, our buddy Tintin. I'm sure he has some stories about O'Charley's and how he met his spouse. So he'll be sure to DM me on that one. Go ahead, Joe.
The last thing I'll say about the Applebee's commercial, and then I promise I'm done with it. One of the lyrics is, two straws, one check, girl, I got you. If you're taking a girl to Applebee's on a date night, you damn well better be paying. Like, that should go without saying.
If you're older than the age of 17, you're
yes. Yeah. But anyway, UAB.
Two of us are never welcome to Applebee's ever again. Go ahead, John.
I don't. Chili's all the way. How about that?
Well, listen, yeah, not that I ever have any desire to be in Applebee's. But.
So UAB gets things.
Half price apps after 10. All right. Sorry. Let's do this podcast. Sorry, Joe.
UAB gets things started off on the right foot. So did Western Kentucky against UT Martin. WKU ultimately wins this game 59-21. Bailey Zappi throws for 7 touchdowns and 424 yards through the air. Great way to start the season for the Tops, but there were two things in this game that bothered me, Eric. One was just the sloppy start overall for Tyson Helton's team. Had some penalties and a lost fumble that really prevented the Tops from breaking away early. And the second was the run defense. UT Martin had the ball for about 8 minutes longer than the Tops did, and the Skyhawks earned over 200 yards and 2 touchdowns on the ground. And that is going to have to improve quickly, because guess what? You have Army and a really good rushing offense on the schedule next week.
Yeah, no, you make an excellent point there, especially when you talk about Army. The best way to neutralize that air raid Zach Kittley, Bailey, Zappy offense is to hold the ball, keep the ball out of their hands. Army is more than equipped to do that. Joe, before I give my synopsis of the game, I just want to ask you one thing, and I guess I could have saved this till after, but it's just kind of burning on my brain now because I had a chance to watch that game back. Any part of you a little bit, listen, I don't want to make a mountain and out of a molehill about one game. D'Angelo Malone, two tackles. I don't think he had a tackle for loss. It's one game, but neither he nor Juwan Jones were able to get to the quarterback. And you would think against an FCS opponent that they would be able to, I don't know. I mean, listen, those guys are premier pass rushers in CUSA, and Malone, we all think, is an NFL prospect. Any part of that trouble you at all?
Yes and no. Ultimately, I did expect his stat line to be a little bit better than it was. But based on watching that game, it kind of seemed like once they realized that the middle of Western Kentucky's defensive line was especially vulnerable to the run, they just kept going at it. Whereas when they tried those, like, you know, tricky little sweeps around the edge, Malone was there and the corners and the outside guys were typically like right there to stop it. Or if they weren't, then the play ensued. But ultimately, it seemed like as the game went on, UT Martin was favoring kind of inside runs as opposed to going around the edge because they knew what was waiting for them.
No, I hear you. And that's something that we can talk about. Western Kentucky really hurt by the loss of Ricky Barber, who is now playing at my alma mater, UCF. Joe, really quick, had a Conference USA assistant coach, Conference USA offensive line coach, tell me that Ricky Barber was one of the top interior defensive linemen that they played against. You're talking about a guy who was a freshman last year. So it goes to show how good he was, and the Tops really missing him on the inside. But just as far as the rest of the game is concerned, yeah, it was a slow start. That first drive in particular for UT Martin, led by Keon Howard, of course, another former CUSA quarterback, one who spent some time at Southern Miss, and most recent stop was Tulane. But yeah, I mean, they had an excellent first drive, drove down the field. It looked like they were going to be able to make a game of it for a little bit. And of course, that has to give Tops fans a little bit of a pause in their heart, getting another FCS opponent's going to come into Houchin-Smith Stadium and, you know, maybe have a chance to pull off the upset. But all in all, Bailey Zappe did what he expected. And I just really, if there's one thing, Joe, that's my biggest takeaway from this game, and I said this on another podcast, with the amount of new players that Tyson Helton is working into his program, I think it's going to take some time. You can't just do all that in a spring and a fall, right? Get all those guys to gel. You got to figure out who's going to start, who's going to contribute where. Some of those guys, take, for example, Adam Cofield, right? Like, he was part of a rotation at North Dakota State, excuse me. He's coming in maybe a little bit more of a feature role, right? Like, guys have to figure out their roles and adjust to that. But the Bailey Zappe offense, or excuse me, that Zach Kittley offense operated by Bailey Zappe, that clearly is in full motion from week one hitting the ground running. And if there's anything that they need, it's that, right? With Bailey Zappe, the Stearns twins, et cetera. So at least they have that is, you know, and Josh Simon as well. I think they had two touchdowns as well. So at least they have that going for them. While the other guys are still trying to fill themselves out, fill out their roles, the offense at least hit the ground running.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head in that it's going to take a minute to build chemistry. And I think some of these pieces are melding in rather quickly. You saw Daywood Davis have a big game, the Oregon transfer that just came into Tyson Helton's offense. But, you know, ultimately, when you have that many new guys, it's not all going to come together immediately. That being said, you mentioned it last week with the familiar troubles against FCS opponents kind of starting to rear their head early in that game. Some people were getting nervous, myself included. So hopefully the Tops can fix their issues heading into a tough opponent against Army and get things going on the right track even more so. With that, let's move on to FIU versus Long Island. Panthers win that one 48-10, another relatively easy win against an FCS opponent for CUSA. Eric, honestly, the first few times I looked at this box score, I honestly thought it was a mistake, because Devontae Price had 165 rushing yards and three touchdowns on five carries. Given what we saw from the Panthers last year, this is about as good a start as they could have hoped for, don't you think?
You are 100% correct as far as good of a start. The only real hiccup, a 74-yard TD pass from Long Island, and play in that cornerback Rashard Dames kind of got his feet tangled up and tripped. That was the only real big play for Long Island. Yes, they had a drive, their Long Island's opening drive. They took it down the field, but that ended up stalling out. I believe it was a missed field goal, if memory serves me correct. But in terms of Devontae Price, Joe, and I had to, you can accuse me of being a homer. I'm sure there are plenty of Conference USA fans who will, but I had to take the opportunity to tweet his stat line in that box score, or the stat broadcast from the UDD main account, because I genuinely feel that if you are not familiar with the name Devontae Price now, you need to be. As you mentioned, five carries. He finished 11 yards shy of his career high rushing in five carries. And yes, it's an FCS opponent. But here's the thing. This is the picture I want to paint for the fans who may only see the box score and didn't get a chance to see that game. Devontae, if you see him, and you've seen him the past few years, he's 6'2 and change, almost 6'3, and kind of a slight guy. He's like 185, 190 in previous years. He's put on 20, 25 pounds of muscle to where he's now a legit 215, 220, and did not lose a bit of speed. His runs, the breakaway runs, were video game-esque. They were the things that you come to the stadium to see, right? So if Devontae can be that guy at 6'2 and change, 220, as I've said, if any team is in better position to have a quick turnaround in relation to last year, I think it's FIU, and in large part because they have that guy who, Jim Nagy, that's the second tweet I've seen the executive director of the Senior Bowl send out about, hey, this guy's the real deal. So for Conference USA fans who are not familiar with Devontae Price, you should be now, because I'm sorry, UTSA fans, he's right there with Sincere McCormick. He just is. And I know I have the benefit of seeing him on a week-in, week-out basis, but he's that good.
Certainly not going to be an easy season for FIU by any means, but if Price can kind of keep up that kind of production, then things might be, you know, headed back above water for the Panthers, so to speak. So we'll see what he can able what he is able to do week in, week out, rather. And then this is the big one that I know we were all just so excited to see, Eric. Charlotte and Duke, 49ers win that one 31-28. Just a magnificent game, and Charlotte's first win against a P5 team ever. For me, the passing game for the Niners was lovely in this one. Vic Tucker had 8 catches for 133 yards. Grant Dubose caught 2 touchdowns and gained 118 yards on just 4 catches. If I have to nitpick, Charlotte kind of let Duke running back Mateo Durant do pretty much whatever he wanted on his way to 255 yards and 3 touchdowns, which I believe was a school record for Duke. But still a momentous weekend for Charlotte and Will Healy. Seeing Healy in his post-game press availability, you couldn't feel anything but just absolute joy for this guy.
Absolute joy for him. Absolute joy for the Niner fan base. Anyone who's been listening to this podcast can go back to 2018, 2019. I've been a believer in the Charlotte program and thinking that, forgive the pun, that they are a relative gold mine. I think and I've thought that they're just scratching the surface of what they can be. And of course, with the hire of Will Healy, the bowl success in 2019, they didn't get a chance to build on that momentum in 2020. So this was the type of game, the type of win that they needed. Joe, coming into this year, I was so intrigued, so interested to know if Will Healy could spark up that momentum, spark up that feeling around the Queen City that, hey, don't worry about North Carolina or Duke or Wake or, you know, anyone else, right? NC State, Charlotte, that's the team you need to worry about in this city. That's the team you need to focus about. That's the team you need to pay attention to. And a win like this does it, right? Now, to take it on the field, it's funny, I had a chance to watch that game on the drive home. I would never watch and drive. And I heard the analyst there, Corey Chavis, did a great job on the broadcast. But Corey Chavis was talking about the receiving game for Charlotte. And he made kind of, an inference that, they need to get Grant Dubose the ball because he had 4 catches for a buck 18 and 2 touchdowns. And no disrespect to Corey. Corey, listen, he played a decade in the NFL at safety and forgotten more football than I'll ever know. But if there's one thing you and I know, that when it is crunch time, your ball's going to Vic Tucker. On that last drive for Charlotte, 3 catches, then you had 2 first downs. You knew in that money time, crunch time, Vic Tucker was the guy. So it was great to see Vic, kind of show out on a big national stage. And also paired with a number 2, if they can have a 1-2 puncher receiver, look out for the Niners as that running game kind of gets going there with Calvin Camp and some of the other guys there. Who are kind of toting the rock for Charlotte. Forget the other running back right now. Shavon McGarrigan, there we go. Him and Shadrick Byrd were the other 2 backs that shared the load with Calvin Camp. But yeah, all in all, Joe, just kind of piggyback on what you said. A great win for Charlotte, just something that really boosts the energy. And for anyone who may have been undecided on, Will Healy, or whether he's the right guy or feelings on Charlotte as a program, I think that type of win gives you reason to buy in. It was just a great moment to see that fan base fired up. Jerry Richardson Stadium on display, and great win overall for Charlotte.
Here's what really impressed me about Grant Dubose specifically, Eric. We just got done talking about with Western Kentucky how tough it can be to immediately build chemistry between a receiver and quarterback. You need that, you know, spring window of time to kind of get acquainted with each other and that sort of thing. Grant Dubose came in from, I know he was at Texas A&M at one point, but he just joined the Charlotte program in the summer. So he didn't have the benefit of all of that and then still came in the biggest moment, arguably, of, you know, the history of Charlotte football. And turned in a fantastic day. So I have to give kudos to him. But to agree with what you said, Vic Tucker is still the guy in this offense. And they ultimately did what they were supposed to do in getting him the ball late in the game. Like, you could just tell the way that Vic Tucker was in the sidelines pregame. I was like, this is going to be his night. That South Florida confidence is showing through right now.
When Vic said, you know, hey, when Hunter Bailey, the Observer, our former UDD, the Charlotte Observer's Hunter Bailey, asked Vic who's some of the better DBs he's facing CUSA, and Vic said, none of them good. That is the confidence right there. You mentioned Grant Dubose came from Small Miles College, was where he came from, not to Charlotte. So, of course, he got a chance to shine on the bigger stage as well. But, yeah, overall, gotta love it.
Fantastic. He was at A&M at one point, though. I didn't mess that part up.
I believe he was. That's what I can double check. I just remember him coming from Miles College because when I saw him as part of the class, I was like, where the hell is Miles College? So,
fair enough. With that, then, let's talk about a less exciting result for CUSA in Wake Forest and Old Dominion. Pretty much what we expected here. The Demon Deacons win this one 42-10. Sam Hartman looked great for Wake, for Old Dominion. It's not that they were bad. I mean, they were, but that's not the main point that I want to get across here. It's more like anytime they had any sort of pressure to execute on offense, they couldn't do it. I think they only converted like 5 third downs, and against an ACC opponent, whoever it is, you have to be better than that.
Yeah, really quick, Joe, just to kind of tie up your point, I think Grant Dubose, James Foster, they're very good friends. James Foster came from Texas A&M. So just to show that, you know, you didn't just make that up out of thin air. That's what it was there. In terms of Old Dominion, yeah, the big thing, and listen, you know, in this deal, there are no moral victories or anything like that, right? Anyone who dealt with Ricky Ronnie, we had the pleasure of talking to him on CUSA Media Day call. Clearly not a moral victory guy when he's someone who when was asked to make his opening statement, says, yeah, I'm not a big opening statement guy. So that kind of gives you his personality, right? He's looking to go out and win. But what more can you expect, Joe, in terms of they had a year off. They lost. We talked about the guys they lost in terms of Caleb Ford, Demendon, Keon White, and some of the other guys who transferred out. So, listen, it's one of those things where you're good to have them back on the field. The guys who have not played in a year, I mean, come on. I mean, can you imagine having a team full of transfers that had to sit out a year? A team full of guys who had to, you know, miss a season because of a torn ACL or something? That's essentially what you're dealing with here. Or maybe not the torn ACL analogy because you can't, you're rehabbing something, whereas they were able to practice. But you get the point, right? I think the biggest thing that I'm looking for, and of course, having the year off and then going into Wake Forest isn't a great indicator of this. The quarterback situation, I expected DJ Mack to look a little bit better, and maybe that's my UCF bias coming in, but also the fact that he's had excellent performances against the Memphises of the world when Memphis was a top 25 team and started a Fiesta Bowl against LSU. So I guess his two picks were a little bit disappointing. Hayden Wolf came in, looked to be the more proficient passer, but overall, just good to see the Monarchs back on the field, and we'll get a better read on them as they, you know, play games against more formidable competition, or at least maybe not more formidable, because you know, in this case, Wake Forest is very formidable, but in this case, competition that's closer to where they're at in terms of talent.
Absolutely. With Old Dominion, like, I think they can only get better, and there's definitely talent on this team. It's just unfortunate that they had to start the year against a team in Wake Forest who offensively has just been consistently getting better and better and better and better the last 5 or 6 years. And ultimately, I think they're, you know, obviously better now than they have been in the last few years, and that's saying something. But with that, then, let's move on to a little CUSA SEC action. Florida and Florida Atlantic. Gators win this one 35-14 in the Swamp. Honestly, I liked what I saw from Nikosi Perry in this game as he threw for 261 yards and a touchdown. Owls honestly did a lot of good things in this game on both sides of the ball, but there is a reason that Florida is now a top 10 team after this week. But FAU took a step forward here, I think. I think Willie Taggart has this team going in the right direction.
Listen, so Joe, just kind of bringing that for full disclosure here. There's been a little bit of consternation in terms of that FAU fan base from things that I've seen online in terms of they're getting a little frustrated in the sense that when you come off the Lane Kiffin era, and not just the success in terms of the win column, the fact that you were scoring points at the rate you were, right? There was a little bit of frustration that I saw from the FAU fan base in terms of some of the decision-making, in terms of putting Javion Posey and giving him certain packages and things of that nature. I think you got to let Willie Taggart coach. I'm not critiquing the fan base per se. I just think it's a situation where, as someone who lives in Florida, and I can attest, you got the G5 team in FAU heading up to Gainesville to take on a Florida team that, while they are a very good team, especially on the defensive side of the ball, they're also bringing in a new quarterback in Emory Jones and replacing guys like Kyle Pitts in the NFL and others. So I think the hopes were up that maybe there would be a little bit more of a competitive showing, and especially considering what the defense did, Joe. The defense held tough for, that's a 14-0 game at halftime, and they forced Emory Jones into some mistakes. There was one really kind of bizarre sequence going into halftime where Emory Jones, I don't know if he forgot at a Tom Brady moment that it was fourth down, but they ran a quarterback sneak from the 4-yard line and FAU stopped him. And so that kind of gave the Owls some momentum and a chance to put some points on the board before halftime. They weren't able to do so. So they went to halftime 14-0. So I just think it's little things like that. But to kind of transition to your point, as far as N'Kosi Perry sent out a tweet after the game, and he said that he was getting a lot of compliments as far as how happy he looked. And he said that, forgive me, I'm not quoting him verbatim, but he said that this is the happiest he's been. You have a very, very good, talented quarterback in N'Kosi Perry. You saw his numbers bear out. And while, yes, a lot of that was playing catch up, Joe, if they get that guy who is able to put up, 261 on a UF defense that, again, one of the best in the nation, they'll be fine. The points will come. So I guess I would tell the FAU fans to trust in the process. Why'd I put an X on process? Trust in the process. I know why I put an X on process, because I was getting ready to transition to the R-E-L-A-X. Relax, as I believe was Aaron Rodgers who said. So FAU is going to be fine. That's clearly a talented football team. They'll get Chase Lassiter back this week, who was out with a COVID situation. They're going to be okay. So I will have a chance to measure them up in the upcoming week.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, it's not uncommon for a college football fan base to think that they can outcoach the coach of their favorite team, right? So I don't think that's a quality that's unique to FAU fans in this case. But A, I think, like, with what Perry said about being happy, like, that's step one, right? If you create a culture where players are excited to show up, then the wins are going to come. Two, I think FAU fans are still a little bit spoiled from the Lane Kiffin era, honestly. Like, Lane Kiffin, for whatever reason, that was just as good of a fit as you could have imagined, as far as like a coach coming into a G5 program and completely turning the culture on its head. And the results prove how successful he was. He won, two conference titles there. Expecting Willie Taggart to have that, not out the gate, but last year was COVID, et cetera, et cetera. But I still maintain that I think he's on the right track. It's just, it's not going to be, immediate, but they have a lot of the tools in place.
No, absolutely. I mean, I you're talking to someone who I've seen Willie Taggart's success from USF. I'm a big believer in him. So FAU fans, and listen, the donation that was given to them, I think they just had a $3 million donation from a donor there in terms of naming the head coaching role there at FAU. That program's fine. Like, that program is heading in the right direction. So they'll be
for sure. Yeah, for sure. And like, this is the last thing I'll say about Willie Taggart. At one point early in his career, coming off of Western Kentucky and what he was able to do at South Florida, like, he clearly had some mojo going in terms of how he coached a team offensively. When he left for Oregon, I'm not privy to his, personal life or whatever, but somewhere along the line, just that confidence was gone. And I think this opportunity here is a really good opportunity for him to start getting that back. It's just not going to come. It's not going to come against a top 10 defense. It's just not. With that, then, let's see what happened in the Arkansas-Rice game. Really a valiant effort from the Rice Owls here as they go down 38-17. Maybe I should say a valiant three quarters of a game from Rice. Arkansas scored 21 unanswered points in the fourth to ultimately seal this one. Wiley Green ultimately had the reins of the offense the majority of the time, and he threw three picks and a touchdown. We did see Luke McCaffrey a little bit, but he only threw the ball 10 times and completed 5 of those passes. So all in all, still some work to do for the Owls. But the fact that they were really like in control of this game for 3 quarters says a lot about, you know, where Mike Bloomgren's brought this team over the last year or so.
Yeah, Joe, this is where we're going to disagree a little bit. And I'm not sitting here saying that Rice is supposed to go in and defeat Arkansas, right? You know, we can, I guess this is kind of my POV. Entering, was this year 4 for Mike Bloomgren, if memory serves me correct? Yeah, he got there 2018, 2019, 2020. So year 4, I think they're a little bit past the moral victories. I'm not saying that that's what you're saying that they should have, but we saw them go in there and defeat Marshall, right? We saw them do that last year and take them for 4 quarters. This isn't exactly the Arkansas team that's led by Houston Nutt and had Run DMC with Darren McFadden. Who was the Felix Jones, right? Were those the 2 running backs when they had an excellent team? It's not quite the world beater Arkansas. Sam Pittman's looking to rebuild that program there. I guess the reason why I'm a little bit critical is this. The run game, 39 carries for 81 yards. And we know that Mike Bloomgren has the intellectual brutality slogan, right? And while they're kind of moving away from that a little bit, they're trying to open up the offense to score some points, and they're getting the quarterback situation worked out with Luke McCaffrey and Wiley Green. At some point, you got to have a bread and butter and an identity, right, Joe? I'll put it to you like this. UAB has consistently been able to run the football and play defense. And I'm not saying that Rice should be UAB out the gate, but it's taken this team how many years to have a real offensive identity? And even the run game, while it's great to do it, it's great to say we're going to pound it 40 times, they're not exactly putting up 200-yard efforts either. So, I'm not here advocating for the firing of Mike Bloomgren. I guess I'm just a little bit disappointed in that this game, as you mentioned, looked like one that they were in control for 3 quarters, and that it would be the type of game that it's in Rice's favor, right? The type of football they're looking to play, they should be able to close that thing out. And yes, Wiley Green threw the 3 interceptions, and that's not helping things when you play that style of football. I guess I'm just a little disappointed that they couldn't bring it home, given the fact that we saw what we saw from them to close 2020, which was be able to play that ball game for 4 quarters against a Marshall team that, quite frankly, I think is better than Arkansas right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think that 4th quarter for them just was so like you watch the other 3 quarters of that game and just they were doing a lot of things right. But ultimately, my biggest issue with Rice's offense has been this. It seems like Bloomgren is really trying to like run the same exact kind of offense he ran at Stanford without Stanford level talent, right? And like there's only so much you can do in that system if you don't have, you know, Christian McCaffrey type guys, right? Like, it, you know, Luke McCaffrey's not his brother, unfortunately. So, I mean, ultimately, maybe it'll come together. I think it will eventually, but I don't know. Look, if David Bailiff was still at the helm going into this Arkansas game, I would have said, like, you know, Arkansas by 30 or 40 or whatever. But right now, like, yeah, Bloomgren is definitely, it seems like it's like 2 steps forward, 1 step back with that program. They kind of get things going in the right direction, which was what we saw in the first 3 quarters of this game. And then they just, you know, completely die in the 4th quarter. So they just need to get those things tweaked a little bit and get back to like that competitive brand of Rice football that this fan base so badly wants it to be.
And that's a great way to kind of, you know, put a synopsis of what I'm saying in terms of, it does feel like there's 2 steps forward, 1 step back. Right. So, but you make a great point when you talk about the end of the David Bailiff era, when they went, I believe 4-20 in the last 2 years there. Yeah. This one probably would have been Arkansas by 60. So in that sense, you know, baby steps, but I can understand the Rice fan base if they're saying, hey, you know, we wish that 4th quarter hadn't gotten away from us because the game was right there for the taking.
Absolutely. So with that, let's talk about that big win from Marshall over Navy. The Thundering Herd take that one 49-7. The Herd did not concede any points until the 4th quarter in this one. What really impressed me about Marshall here was just how aggressive that defense was. Huff talked about it a little bit when ESPN pulled him aside. Not ESPN, I apologize. CBS Sports pulled him aside. They looked a little undisciplined at times, but they also put up 9 sacks and 13 tackles for loss. Opposing offensive lines are really going to have trouble with them this season. We saw Grant Wells have a little bit of trouble through 2 interceptions, but ultimately did complete 20 of 30, put them in great position to score, and the running game took care of the rest.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Grant Wells did have a little struggles there as far as the two interceptions. Definitely not the bounce back performance you're looking for with coming off the way last season ended, but it's only one game. We're not going to judge him just yet. The things that I were keeping an eye on during that ball game, A, the fact that they were able to get 9 sacks against a team that's not looking to throw the ball that much. Of course, they had to being down as they were. Impressive, especially when considering the fact they're losing guys like Darius Hodge, who, you know, one of the premier pass rushers in Conference USA last year. So the fact that they're able to do that, and look at Eli Neal with 3 sacks. It's like he's stepping right in there as far as the linebacking, you know, history there at Marshall goes. And then the running game, right? You want to see how they're going to be able to replace Brendan Knox. And, you know, when we had Coach Huff on, he's mentioned that's going to be a combination of guys wasn't looking to, as far as tipping his hand just yet, as far as would be the running back there. And you get Rashad Ali, who had 4 scores, then Sheldon Evans, who had 2 scores. While not necessarily a great output, 30 carries for 101 yards, at least you see some level of, okay, they have a system in place that they're going to, you know, kind of work with as far as replacing the tremendous output that Brendan Knox would have there. And then the receivers, you know, Corey Gamage, Talik Keaton, they put up their yards. Xavier Gaines is one of the most special weapons of all of CUSA. So clearly, to come out and beat a Navy team just the way they did, you know, you would think if they beat him 21-10 or 21-14, it's like, okay, nice little win for Marshall. Let's not get too excited. But to beat him down the way they did, especially led by a defensive performance, I think this was a real statement game and an identity game for Coach Huff as far as what he's looking to do there in Huntington.
For sure. And you mentioned Eli Neal. I'll give you another name, Abraham Beauplan, number 7 on that defense, the 6'2", 223-pound junior out of Boynton Beach. Really just did everything he was supposed to do in this game. He played about as perfect of a game as you could imagine. I was talking to our friend from the Hustle Belt, A.B. King James, on Twitter the other day. And he was the point of the conversation was, are tackles like a good representation of like defensive performance? And I made the point that it all depends on the position. If you're a safety and you're the leading tackler, your defense probably has some issues. However, if a guy like Abraham Beauplan is your leading tackler, which he was in this game with 13, then that is an indicator that he is exactly where he needs to be more often than not. So Marshall's defense is absolutely taking a step in the right direction, and I think this game was a very good example of that.
You and I are very much believers in that stat, Joe. If you're getting a bunch of tackles the second, third level, it's nice to have your safety make plays, right? But you want your safety to come up and make some plays in the box and behind the line of scrimmage. So clearly the fact that they were making tackles at the second level and at the first level and really stopping that Navy rushing attack, tremendous job by the Herd.
Absolutely. And then we'll move on to the just a bummer of a result that Mississippi State and Louisiana Tech was. Another valiant effort from CUSA as the Bulldogs lose 34-35. Couldn't quite hit that last second field goal to win. But I'll tell you this, Eric, I was really impressed with Austin Kendall in this game. He gave what I would call a gritty performance, ran for 68 yards, threw for 269, 3 total touchdowns. Just by the end of this game, you saw that white uniform just covered in mud and, you know, paint from Mississippi State helmets and whatever else. He really put himself out there. You can, you know, debate whether or not that's like the healthiest course of action, but he wanted to win, and, you know, I'll respect him for that. And the last thing I'll say about this, you know, Skip Holt's team has some heart, but they really had something of a defensive collapse there in the fourth, similar to what we saw in the Rice Arkansas game.
Yeah, Joe. I mean, one of the things that I kind of noticed, Tyler Grubbs was kept relatively quiet. He had six tackles, a sack and a tackle for loss, but he's a guy who's very capable of, you know, double digit tackles and a couple tackles for loss. BJ Williamson had a nice game, you know, the 6 tackles, and he had a tackle for loss as well. But you just would hope with the talent they have with Williamson, Tyler Grubbs, Trey Baldwin, Ezekiel Barnett, etc., that they would have found a way to close. And unfortunately, they just weren't able to, giving up the 21 points in the fourth quarter. And listen, it's a Mike Leach offense. You know that they're capable of putting up points in bunches, right? But it's just one of those things where, as we talked about in the game with Rice, just not able to close and do it for 4 quarters. To kind of piggyback on what you said with Austin Kendall, I think the thing that I was most interested by, and I want to run this by you, different, get your thoughts on this. You're talking about a guy who he started some games at West Virginia and had some, you know, a little bit of playing time, but he's really looking and is on his, presumably his last shot to live up to that 4 or 5-star potential, you know, fringe five-star, little four-star potential coming out of high school. And he clearly wants it, right? As you mentioned, he's kind of coming in at La Tech. And I think this performance is one that you never want to see a guy lose his job due to injury. You can go back to Drew Bledsoe, Tom Brady for an example of that. But it just seems that Austin Kendall, if he can really kind of, you know, get a stranglehold in this job, it may be tough for, you know, Luke Anthony to come back. And it sucks for him because he's had a really nice year last year and looked to, for all intents and purposes, would have been the guy this year had he not been recovering from the injury. But kind of want to get your thoughts on that. If you think what you've seen from Austin Kendall, A, if it's enough to say, hey, you know, this is the guy we need to stick with going forward, and B, if there's a way you can pull him.
Yeah, I mean, look, Austin Kendall, I mentioned how good he was. I think if he is able to stay healthy, I think he's the guy you got to stick with right now. And granted, like, based on what I understand, I don't even know that Luke Anthony is healthy enough to even, like, be ready to go if Austin Kendall did get hurt. I believe second on their depth chart right now is redshirt sophomore Aaron Allen. So that would definitely not put Louisiana Tech in a good position. But, you know, you have to kind of respect, as I said earlier, what Austin Kendall is putting out there. This is a guy that prior to joining Skip Holtz's team was, you know, doing medical equipment sales over the phone. And then he found out that he had the opportunity to come back and give it one last shot. So, you know, it's the Eminem song, you know, you only get one shot, do not miss your chance to blow. He's putting his entire body out there, and ultimately we'll see if he can, you know, hold up, but I understand why he's playing the way he's playing, and we'll see if he can, you know, maintain it throughout the course of the season. But ultimately he might have to adopt a different playing style, stay in the pocket, find those, all those really good receivers that Louisiana Tech have. Smoke Harris immediately comes to mind, who played fairly well on Saturday. And then ultimately that also comes down to Louisiana Tech's offensive line. Can they, you know, put Kendall in situations where he doesn't have to run the ball as much as he did on Saturday? So we'll see.
Hey Joe, really quick, I don't want to let the point you made kind of go unnoticed here. You talk about Austin Kendall. Played his 5 years of football, as I mentioned, started some games at West Virginia, but you mentioned that he had a medical sales job. And the great piece in The Athletic talks about how he relinquished his company car, his gas car, his laptop, and sales territory to pursue a 6 year of college football. The reason I emphasize that, Joe, is I think it gets lost just the dedication and what football means to some of these guys. Because if you present all of those things that I just mentioned to any 21, 22, 23-year-old coming out of college, they're not giving that up. As a matter of fact, that's better than what a lot of 20, 21, 22, 23-year-olds are getting out of college, you know? So let's not just breeze past what Austin Kendall gave up, and hopefully that'll be there. We're waiting for him should, you know, professional football not be in his future. But just to give that up, I don't want to let that just go understated, because that's kind of like the goal for a lot of people in their early 20s coming out of college, you know?
Highly recommend, if anybody hasn't seen it, it's been out there for a while, the HBO documentary Student Athlete. And that goes into what a lot of these guys who ultimately, you know, aren't good enough for the next level or get hurt or whatever have to face in order to, like, really make it in the professional world. And a lot of them, as this documentary points out, get nowhere close to as good of a professional setup as Austin Kendall had in his sales job. So the fact that he was willing to give that up to come back for a sixth year of college football and just give it one last ride and see what happens is nothing short of admirable. So we'll see how well it pans out for Louisiana Tech over the course of this season, but it has my attention. I'll say that.
Undoubtedly, Joe, it's a great point to mention that documentary, because those are things that plenty of people are working for. So glad you were able to get that in there as well.
Yeah, I mean, like, and I don't want to go on a rant, but there's, you know, the guys in that documentary, you know, end up, like, picking up trash and, like, you know, having to drive, like, multiple states in a day to coach at camps in order to make ends meet and live in their cars. Like, it's not pretty, some of these guys end up having to go through. And, you know, it's great that Austin Kendall at least clearly has the professional aptitude to have a career like that waiting for him once his football days are done. And with that, then, let's talk about Middle Tennessee and Monmouth. Blue Raiders win this one 50-15. Bailey Hockman played very well in this one. He finished the game 17-22 for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns. This is really what MTSU needed to do against this type of opponent. A lot of questions around Rick Stockstill right now, and what, you know, it, whether or not he's still able to lead that team at the caliber that he was a few years ago. But this is a really good start for them.
Yeah. Listen, I might be in, you know, in the minority here. Okay, so Rick Stockstill, I believe, is now 3 games over .500 with this win, right? And plenty of people can judge his body of work and say, should he be the guy? Should they have made a move? Listen, I think at Middle Tennessee, and maybe, Joe, this can be a broader discussion as far as our views on what Middle Tennessee State is as a job overall. I just think that Rick Stockstill has gotten a fair amount, right? Now, whether you want to consider that mediocrity or not, to me, that's more of an indictment on, sorry, I don't want to sound like a crap on Murfreesboro, Tennessee, but I think it's more of an indictment on being located in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and in the shadow of SEC country and all those things than it is necessarily Middle Tennessee. So I had to get that off my chest. In relation to this game, the only thing that I think surprised me a little bit was the lack of efficiency running the football. And the only reason I say that is because when I asked Rick Stockstill Conference USA Media Days about his lack of productivity from the running back, something that I'm sure fans of this podcast have heard me mention multiple times, he talked about how he really wanted to get the running backs going, get that production back up. And yes, it's only one game, but against a Monmouth and FCS opponent, we got Frank Pizet with 5 carries for 27 yards, Brad Anderson 3 for 25, Shaitan Mobley 4 for 24, Amir Rasul 7 for 18, Martel Petway 3 for 6. Joe, that doesn't look any different than the rushing numbers you were getting during the Asher O'Hara era, where it was just the quarterback getting the majority of the carries and then, you know, kind of a hodgepodge of backs, right? So only one game. I will wait to see what comes of it. And as you mentioned, Bailey Hockman looked very good. So at least they have the passing game going for them because they have a sneaky, deep wide receiving core. But you'd like to see the running backs get off a little bit, if just for sheer, you know, morale in that running back room, because they haven't been really utilized as much as maybe they would have liked, especially guys like Petway coming from West Virginia, where he ran for 700 yards a couple of years ago. And then Amir Rasul is a former 5-star prospect who began his career at Florida State. So just something to keep an eye on. But all in all, a very good win for the Blue Raiders, because they need to get those wins going and get them, you know, stacked up so they can get back into bowl contention.
Let me ask you this as a follow-up, Eric. When it comes to that running back room, do you think the running back by committee situation is the way to go? Or should Petway be the guy? Should like Shaitan Mobley be the guy? Should they be centralizing their rushing attack around one guy?
It's a tough question, right? Because for CUSA fans, you'll know when you mention the name Brad Anderson, right? You know the type of guy he is. He's 5'8", 5'9". He's a guy you're going to kind of get in there in jet sweeps and, you know, maybe get him a couple tosses, right? And you want to make the most of that. He's a guy who's a dynamic and a playmaker. But they had a guy like that over the past few years in Jay McDonald, a guy who has legit 4.4 track speed, but not the biggest back in the world. It just didn't work out. Shaitan Mobley. He's the last guy to run for 600 yards for this program. I believe that was the 2018 year when he did that. I know 2019 and 2020 numbers were a little bit off. I think, and I'm not taking a cop-out, it's nice to have the depth, but you want to go in there and establish two backs at most, in my opinion, who are going to be your bell cows, right? And I think you brought in the talent in Petway and Rasul to be those guys. Because, and Joe, this is not a slight on Shaitan Mobley. We're CUSA guys. We know who he is. We know what he can do. But if you felt that you had a steady running back in Shaitan Mobley, then why are you going into the transfer portal to bring into those guys, right? So I think you got to feature the two guys you brought in. Petway is the one who's had the most success on, quote unquote, the highest level, the highest stage, and let them get going. So we'll see. But to answer your question, yeah, I would like to see them kind of dial back the, I guess, the number of carries. Again, let's look at those numbers again. You got, you know, Frank Pizet, I didn't even mention him. He's a guy in that you know, running back room as well. So just 5 carries, 3 carries, 4 carries, 7 carries, 3 carries. The game worked out well to where, you know, none of those guys were going to top 10, 11 carries anyhow. But splitting the carries 4 or 5 ways, I don't think that's productive for any of the backs.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And like the last thing that I will put, you know, out into the world as we talk about MTSU, Asher O'Hara finished his game for Sacramento State this weekend, 13 of 21 for 119 yards and 2 touchdowns through the air and 65 yards on the ground. So like if you are, you know, going to have the culture that you have that ultimately, you know, presumably played a part in why one of the better dual threat quarterbacks USA has seen in some time didn't want to be part of your program anymore, then you better have a balanced offensive attack that's going to, you know, strike fear into the hearts of your opponents. And that's ultimately not what they're doing here. While Bailey Hockman, as you said, had a pretty solid day through the air.
Yeah, Joe. And the thing is this, right? It's almost kind of a dozen here or six and six in terms of the offense was going to shift because Rick Stock still wanted the offense to shift, right? And with Tony Franklin no longer being part of that program, it probably made the most sense for Asher O'Hara to depart. But as you mentioned, when you decide to go down that route and you look at some of the things that, and it's only one game, we don't want to come out and have a molehill, there will be opportunities at the end of this year to truly evaluate whether or not that shift in the short term was right. But I can just say from speaking with Rick Stockstill media days, he was very emphatic about the need for that shift. So we'll see how it plays out.
We'll see what that shift has in store for them when they play Virginia Tech next week, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. With that, then let's move on to the result of North Texas and Northwestern State. This was a 44-14 win for the Mean Green. Defense did what they were supposed to do against this level of opponent. They'll have to be better against SMU next week. But Eric, DeAndre Torrey, the hype around him looks to be very, very much deserved. 244 yards on the ground and three touchdowns in this one. So they know they have that weapon going into next week's rivalry game.
Listen, if there's one thing you had to keep an eye on, when you lose Oscar Attaway III to the ACL injury, when you lose Trey Siggers to SMU, they had a real three-headed monster last year, Joe, in terms of running back room, and that was just DeAndre Torrey. And we know, you and I, as guys who follow this conference, know the type of year he had in 2019 when he had 15 touchdowns at just under 1,000 yards. It always felt like he was capable of this kind of production, right? And then, of course, he had the follow-up year. Excuse me, I think it was 2018 when he had that production. He had kind of a down year in 2019, and then 2020, you know, he kind of shared the room with two other backs. You just wanted to see if he's going to be able to bounce back and really build upon that almost 1,000-yard year. This is the type of game that does it. So if DeAndre Torrey can carry the load, they don't have to be a three-running back room. It's nice to have those guys, but if he can carry the load and help Jace Reuter or Austin Ani as they come along at the quarterback position, that is huge. And we saw that Jace Reuter got the majority of the playing time. They were going 10-21 for a 131, one touchdown, two interceptions. So gotta keep an eye on that. But if they can give it to DeAndre Torrey, or as his Twitter handle is Torrey Boy, which is one of the better Twitter handles in all of CUSA, they're gonna be in great shape. And then my other takeaway, only 14 points allowed. And yes, it is Northwestern State. So you probably say only 14. Why didn't they shut him out? If you know the defensive struggles that North Texas had over the past 3 years, 14 is a lot less than 40, which is what they were averaging last year, allowing. So overall, really a good win for the Mean Green.
Right. Like you said it, like when you are only allowing 14 points compared to some of the results we've seen the last couple of years, this isn't just a moral victory. It's a complete victory, but it's going to be a big upgrade in competition next week and in the following weeks. So we'll see what they're able to do in that regard. And then another marquee win for CUSA this past week, Illinois against UTSA. 37-30 was the victory margin for the Roadrunners here. I think the only people who were surprised here were Illinois fans. Like you saw on Twitter, like the talk surrounding this game going into the week, like, is UTSA actually good? And everyone's like, yes. Yes, UTSA is actually quite good. and very much better than Scott Frost, Nebraska at this point. We know Illinois did lose one of their better players in the aftermath of that opening week game. But you go back and look at what all of the, you know, big marquee names for UTSA were able to do in this game. Frank Harris was 20 of 32 for 280 yards through the air and a touchdown. Sincere McCormick, 31 carries and 117 yards on the ground. And then Zachary Franklin pulled in 10 balls for a touchdown and 155 yards. Jeff Traylor has this offense playing very, very well right now. Defense maybe have some tweaks here and there as they head into conference play and they head back to the Alamo Dome this week. But, UTSA, for the amount that they've invested into that program, you know, not a bad day if you can go to a Big Ten opponent, get a win, and come home with the $1.1 million check.
And the words, and now I'm forgetting the name of the head coach, but the I wish I'd remember that name. But anyhow, when he said, give me my money, as he said after they pulled off the money victory, that's what Jeff Traylor was shouting out after the victory. And here's the thing, Joe. They led that game from start to finish, right? I mean, that is the type of impressive performance that you're looking for out of UTSA. here's the thing that was so impressive. You know, I'm going to want your thoughts on this. Frank Harris, we've wanted for a long time for two things. One, for him to be healthy, and B, to show that he can make that development as a passer. And the fact that he threw for 280 and completed over 60% of his passes, going 20 to 32, you know, that to me was just the impressive thing. Because this wasn't the Frank Harris going 20 of 32 for 280 against Incarnate Word, right? That was what he did, I believe it was 2 years ago before he had an ACL injury. This was against a Big Ten opponent on the road, leading from being in control of that game from start to finish. It just was very impressive for me because, and this is what I want to get your opinion on, Joe. Mm-hmm. They can win with Sincere McCormick. They've shown that. They did that last year. They can win with Sincere McCormick and defense. They showed that last year. They can win with Sincere McCormick defense and great special teams play. They did that last year. Frank Harris, and that's not to say Frank Harris had a bad year last year. He had a more than adequate year. But if he can be a reason they win games, it's going to be a UAB UTSA West. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, there's definitely reason to think that. And it all, you know, is going to kind of build towards that UTSA-UAB matchup later in the year. But, you know, I'll tell you this. The whole time I was watching UTSA play Illinois and that UTSA offense was on the field, I was just staring at Frank Harris's knees. Like, if those hold up, like, the sky is relatively the limit for this UTSA team. Like, that's how many fantastic weapons they have at their disposal. And like you said, they already have so many other weapons. If something were to happen to Frank Harris, you know, knock on wood, then they're still in contention. But ultimately, when everybody is healthy on this UTSA team, then compared to like G5 competition, they're really, really good. So like you said, like this Frank Harris led offense is really, really scary. And ultimately, if he can stay healthy, then they're going to be, I hope they get more like national TV games, frankly, based on what we've saw from them in this Illinois game. And which, by the way, you were thinking of North Carolina A&T coach Sam Washington with the bring me my money quote.
Thank you. I need to clean that up for me. But all your points you made there are very excellent points. If Frank Harris can stay healthy and be the reason they win games, look out.
Absolutely. And then we have South Alabama and Southern Miss. The Jaguars win this one 31-7 over Southern Miss. Jake Bentley had a pretty solid game coming back from this one. The former South Carolina and help me out here. South Carolina and where was Jake Bentley's other stop? Former South Carolina and Utah quarterback, played at Utah during the COVID year last year. He looked really solid in this game, so hats off to him. 17-22 for 269 yards and two touchdowns. Really, the highlight of the game for Southern Miss in this one was Frank Gore Jr., 19 carries for 81 yards. But ultimately, if that's your highlight, that kind of shows how much work is really needed. The South Alabama team, granted they won last year, but it was a much closer margin. And I'm really hoping Southern Miss didn't take a step back. It's just one game, but they really can't afford to lose any more momentum than they did with what went on last year.
As you mentioned, the fact that they lost the way they did, this was, and I mentioned it on last week's podcast, that going to, you know, Hancock-Whitney Stadium was not going to be easy considering South Alabama had the confidence and momentum of winning last year's game, right? So, and listen, that team, they're no slouch, right? They're a team, a program that's trying to build up some good equity of their own because they've had their struggles in the previous era. So the fact that they're out there and can beat a, I don't want to call Southern Miss and USA a rivalry, but in terms of regionally speaking, none of those teams want to lose to each other, right? You know, I'm sure they all think that they're better than the other in terms of their fan base and whatnot. And I did see the Southern Miss fan base a little bit disappointed. Want to give a shout out to Sippy Sports Show. He's one of the better Southern Miss followers out there. But we had a shot at him in the stands looking rather disappointed following the Southern Miss game. So, yeah, all in all, I think that was one of the low lights for Conference USA in this weekend. A weekend that had plenty of highlights. But Southern Miss, it's only one game. It's the first game of the Will Hall era. I still think they'll look better than they did last year. And as I mentioned on previous podcasts, three of their losses were by less than a score. So, you know, despite all the turmoil, they still fought hard. I think they'll bounce back from this, but obviously not a good start.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair to say. Like, we've talked a lot about some of the offensive pieces that Southern Miss has that get us, you know, excited when you look at their schedule. But, you know, ultimately, when you play these kind of regional opponents, like you said, when you're competing for a lot of the same recruits, a lot of the same, you know, money, if we're being real, in terms of fan support and all that, like, you got to have a better showing than 31-7. You just have to.
I completely agree. Completely agree. It's a great point you make as far as just building up or not building up, but really trying to convince the fan base that this is something that they need to be invested in. That's a good point.
And with that, let's wrap up the recap of last week with UTEP and Bethune-Cookman. The Miners start the season 2-0 and finish this game 38-28. Ronald Awat, 19 carries and 126 yards on the ground and a touchdown for the Miners in this game. You know, we talked about, like, I think it was you, Eric, that mentioned, like, Bethune-Cookman was going to put up a good fight, and they did, only a 10-point win in the Sun Bowl. But, you know, ultimately, like, any win is a good win for UTEP at this point with where they are in the program. And, you know, I think this is like the second time they've started 2-0 in like the last 6 years.
Joe, when you have a combined, I believe it's 5 wins over the previous 4 seasons, starting out 2-0 is never going to be a bad thing. Yes, both victories, one over New Mexico State, and that program, they've had struggles over the past dozen years. And this victory over FCS Bethune-Cookman, which, as I said, right up the road, about 2 hours from me in Daytona Beach, it's a very proud and very successful HBCU and FCS program. But all in all, I guess the only thing that I'm curious of is the status of Deion Hankins. We know that, I believe it was a shoulder injury. I'll have to go back and check it afterwards. You know that he didn't suit up. So Ronald Awat more than capable of carrying the load. And as I mentioned, between him and Quadres Wadley and now Willie Eldridge, 14 carries for Buck 18. It goes to show that they have some nice depth there at running back. And the reason I want to emphasize that, Joe, before getting to Gavin Hardison, when you're rebuilding a program, one of the things that all of these teams can talk about, whether it's, and I honestly want to put FIU in this category because I think they're an anomaly, but whether it's a UTEP or a Rice or an ODU, it's not that you don't have 22 guys out there or, you know, 25, you include your special teamers who can play. It's a matter of having 35, 40, 45 guys who can play, right? The depth. So the fact that they have 3 running backs who are seemingly, and really 4 if you include Deion Hankins as well, it's just building up that depth at positions, and especially key positions, skill positions, guys who are going to make an impact and score points. Those things will help you. I mean, they've always been, relatively speaking, solid in the trenches. When you look at Bobby DeHaro, who's been one of the top linemen in CUSA for the past 3 years, it hasn't been that's hurt them. It's just been the guys who can go out there and make plays elsewhere. So good to see that. Good to see Gavin Hardison not throwing interceptions, 3 touchdowns. So something to build on. Yes, we would like to see the defense not allow 28 points to an FCS team. But as I mentioned, that's a proud and very successful FCS program. So you knew that they were going to go in there and not just roll over and, you know, not have any experience or be down on themselves if they got down 14-0. So all in all, I will say it, and I know I say it a lot, but good win for UTEP.
For sure. That's a really good point about depth. Like, when you look at where this program came from in terms of, you know, record and all that, the fact that, like you said, they have so many running backs in that stable is extremely interesting. And one thing I want to point out from this game, like, we've talked a lot about how Jacob Cowing is like the main weapon in this passing attack. He only caught 2 passes in this game for, what was it, 23 yards? And granted, one of those was a touchdown, but given that they clearly have enough weapons to shift away from Cowing when, you know, based on what I saw from this game, you know, Bethune-Cookman had him relatively covered for most of it. So the fact that they have other options now is extremely encouraging if you're a UTEP supporter.
No doubt about it. And listen, just if you're a UTEP supporter, the fact that you're 2-0, Joe, if you look at the team's schedule, and I don't have a pull up in front of me, I just was looking at it in doing offseason previews. The fact that they're 2-0, and that gives them 4 wins away from bowl contention. Here, we got the schedule right here. So they're going to play at Boise, right? That one you're probably going to give to Boise. New Mexico, you got to think that's a toss-up game, right? Then they play Old Dominion, which, as we mentioned, returning to football after a year off. Southern Miss. I didn't have them winning that game, but that one could be a toss-up when you look at the way Southern Miss came out. I'll give Louisiana Tech and FAU and UTSA and North Texas. Give those games to those opponents, so I think they'll lose those 4. But then you look at, they have Rice and then UAB, right? So UAB, you're probably kind of lost right there. But between Rice, Southern Miss, ODU, New Mexico, that could be your 4 that you get to get the 6, and that means you're bowling.
It's very, very possible, as you said. And, you know, credit to Dane Dimmel and the way he's coached this team the last couple of games and being able to turn that around. All right, so that finishes up the recap for this week. And, you know, Eric, we talked about it a little bit off air, but, like, this opening weekend, it was a full slate. We have pretty close to a full slate this next weekend. Things are just more fun when there's this amount of G5 football on in one weekend, even if we have to pack it into like Wednesday and Monday nights.
Joe, I am, and this has been a long held belief of mine. I understand that that game might not be the most nationally appealing, right? But when people are hungry for football, and I think people are especially hungry for football in terms of the way that they experience it, specifically college football, the camaraderie, the pageantry, the tailgating, the full stands, the bands, all those things that I will admit, I was never, I don't want to say I wasn't big on them, Joe. They just weren't a draw for me as much as I just like college football. I think if you go to a school that's a traditional blue blood, maybe you get more attached to the band and all those things. I went to UCF, right? I graduated 2015. We had good success, but it wasn't like we're a traditional powerhouse like Michigan or et cetera. But those were things that fans missed last year. And I think with the return of football in that capacity and with all those things back, I would love to see more G5 games just middle of the week. We've seen the success that the midweek MAC game, the MACtion, right? We've seen the success of that. I would love to just see whether it's a CBS Sports or, you know, ESPN2, we could go down the list, right? FS1, just take a flyer on CUSA, you know, and I'm being specific here when I say CUSA, because and Joe, we can get this discussion another time. Quite frankly, the rest of the G5 leagues, they have better TV deals, right? So, I mean, there's no other way to say it. I would love to see, we saw NFL Network do the 1 year with CUSA, and I thought it was great exposure, right? You know, maybe give whoever were to take a flyer on CUSA a little bit of flexibility as far as flexing out games later on in the year that might not be as appealing. I know you want to showcase every team, and that would be quote-unquote fair, but I just want to see this league get more exposure because, as you mentioned, I mean, look at the Duke-Charlotte. That was great exposure for the league. Really fun. A fan base that really, you know, needed that opportunity to showcase what they can be. Jerry Richardson Stadium, I think, is one of the most top 15 or 20 venues as far as G5 football, as far as being a hidden gem, you know? So I'd love to see whether it's CBS Sports or, and of course, you know, there's the deal with CBS Sports now, but just, I'd love to see a bit more of a bigger platform take a chance on CUSA and just put them midweek and say, let's take a shot at these guys. You know, it's 1 year. It's 1 year. What's wrong with taking the shot?
Here's why I think that something like that would absolutely work. With the widespread legalization of sports gambling that we're seeing in the U.S. right now, the way that a lot of recreational sports bettors, you know, do it now is, you know, you get off of work at whatever time, you sit down the couch, you open your DraftKings or FanDuel. Out here, it's like Scoreboard. There's a ton of different apps depending on where you are in the country. But you just look at what's going on. Like, all right, I'll throw, you know, a $5 bet on this game. I'll throw a $10 bet over here. And, you know, most, you know, responsible gamblers have a little cutoff. But when it comes to, you know, A, just the entertainment value, you can't really beat college football. So I have to think that in the U.S., there's plenty of people who would prefer to bet on, you know, a weeknight college football game or watch a college football game than, you know, to, you know, terrible MLB teams on ESPN Plus or whatever. And then you factor in the fact that just some of these lines for these G5 games are so odd recently, right? Like Cyrus was talking about it on Twitter as well. Like some of these lines are like, oh, you know, what was it? Like UTEP was like +8 against New Mexico State or something like that. Like that was a pretty easy win. Like the fact that like people are still kind of figuring it out, like figuring out how to, you know, set, you know, money lines and stuff for G5 football because they just don't get that exposure when you compare it to like G5 games. Like, I really think there's a big opportunity here for CUSA and the G5 at large to, you know, jump on this and grow their popularity with those weeknight games because of things like sports gambling.
Joe, you mentioned sports gambling. I will throw another thing out. I don't know if this happens to you, but the amount of college football fantasy sites that I get hit up on a routine weekly basis who are trying to figure out,
yeah,
is guy X playing, is guy Y playing? And I had to say, you know, I can give you the information to the best of my knowledge, but I don't certainly don't have an injury report. It's one thing that college football doesn't provide. You know, I wish I had one. If you get one, let me know. But college football, fantasy football, as that explodes, the amount of people who did not know who Devontae Price was are now like trying to add him in their leagues is phenomenal. The amount of guys who didn't know who Grant DuBose was who are trying to add them in their leagues is phenomenal. So I do think there is a market and would love to see a premier platform. And again, not to say that Conference USA doesn't have nice platforms, right? I don't want to downplay that, but would love to see, you know, an ESPN2 or something like that. Just take a flyer on Conference USA and say, we're going to give you a Tuesday night slot or a Thursday night slot or whatever it may be for a year. And let's see what results. Because I think, as you and I have both laid out, there is room for growth.
Absolutely. And I'm surprised that fantasy college football is not more popular already. Like, you look at fantasy football when it comes to the NFL, and if you are in a league that's bigger than like 10 or 12 teams, then you are getting deeper than a lot of the average football fan. Like, you're getting into names that like a lot of like casual football fans like don't even like really recognize anymore. Like, there was a there was a joke on TikTok about it the other day where it was like this guy playing in a 32 team fantasy league and like his like third round pick was Frank Gore Sr. You know what I mean? Like, with college football fantasy, you have like so many more players to pick from. Like, I feel like those leagues can be so much more competitive just to someone who really enjoys fantasy sports like I do.
Could not agree more with you in that case.
Awesome. I think with that, then we should probably get into some previews because we're getting close to an hour and we haven't even touched that already. So with that, then let's talk about the games coming up in CUSA this week. First off, we have UTEP and Boise State on Friday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on FS1. You can catch that one in Albertson Stadium, Boise, Idaho, the blue turf. Despite the Broncos being 0-1 to start the year, I think they are a fairly easy pick here. They're favored by 26. The Miners have one of their best teams in years, but beating down New Mexico State followed by a 10-point win against an FCS team, I'd be shocked if that was enough to take down Boise State on the blue turf like we just got done talking about.
Yeah, listen, I think what at best what this game has the opportunity to be for UTEP is a measuring stick to see how well they've improved as a program in the Dana Dimmel era, right? In terms of building depth and what, you know, offensive playmakers and things like that. I think it's going to be key to watch if Deion Hankins is back for this game, because any shot they have of really being wholly competitive slash pulling the upset, I think they're going to need all hands on deck. So Boise's going to win this one, but I think if you are a CUSA slash UTEP fan, you want to see how this team can compete against a blue blood G5 in Boise State.
For sure. And then with that, we have Army hosting Western Kentucky on Saturday at 11:30 Eastern in the morning on CBS Sports Network. God, that is 8:30 Pacific time. I'm going to have to get up so early for that. I'm not looking forward to it. But you can catch that one on CBS Sports Network. And look, Army favored by 7 points heading into this one. Here's what's concerning about this Army team from the standpoint of a Western Kentucky fan. Their run game is as solid as it usually is. They ran for 258 yards on 67 attempts against Georgia State last week. WKU's run defense, as I talked about, against UT Martin looked iffy, given that they clean up some of those early game mistakes we saw last week. But if Army is able to control the clock and keep Bailey Zappe and the offense off of the field, then that creates some problems for the Tops. I think I'm still picking Western Kentucky, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little nervous.
I am also picking Western Kentucky. And as you mentioned, Joe, 11:30 a.m. start time. I don't want to hear you crying about 8:30 a.m. We see that all the time in college, you know, get up early and get up out there for tailgate. All right. So I don't want to hear you moaning, complaining about 11:30 start time, 8:30 your time. You'll make it. You'll be fine. They have coffee. And I know you are a large consumer of the cold brew. So I know you will be fine. But with that being said, I am with you. Give me the Tops. And it's because I firmly believe that Western Kentucky, their formula for victory, A, is going to be the passing game. But B, if you're going to beat Army, you're going to have to, and I want to make sure I say this correctly, outscore them. Meaning, that's not to say that Army's going to put up 45 points, right? That's just not the style of offense they play. However, if it's easier for Western to go get 7 points and six plays and 80 yards or seven plays and 75 yards. And Army's out there, you know, fighting for, you know, 7 points, and it's going to take them 12 plays, 13 plays. Just that quick strike offense is one where if you can get up 10-0, 14-0, and you get that score and change lead on them, it's going to be much more difficult for Army to make up that difference than it would be Western Kentucky.
For sure. And I'll just add, getting up at 8:30 in the morning for tailgates and getting up at 8:30 in the morning for work are not the same at all. When I get up at 8:30 in the morning for tailgating, it makes like the Mario sound when I get out of bed, like, ba-ding! But like not the same when I have to like actually be on it at 8:30 in the morning.
Excellent.
So, and then we have MTSU and Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech favored by 19.5 heading into this game that kicks at 2 p.m. Eastern on ACC Network Extra. I think that's a fair line. When we saw Virginia Tech upset number 10 North Carolina last week, we saw this Hokie team be very solid, obviously. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be anywhere as easy to put up 50 on this Virginia Tech team as it was for the Blue Raiders to do to Monmouth last week. I think we get a better idea of what weaknesses this MTSU has after they inevitably lose to Virginia Tech, though we shouldn't expect a blowout, in my opinion, and hopefully they take it as a learning experience.
Yeah, Joe, listen, I do believe that Virginia Tech will win this game, but I'm not going to lie. I was caught off guard by their upset of North Carolina. I didn't think that VT had snowball's chance in hell. I thought it was really high on Sam Howell and Mack Brown and company, but they went there and played a really good ball game. So if that's the type of team that they are, then Middle has no shot. If they're a little bit closer to the middle of the pack AAC team, ACC, wrong conference, that I thought they were, then I'll give Middle a fighting shot. But all in all, I think Virginia Tech wins this game.
I have to wonder if like Justin Fuente went into that locker room and was just like, I'm begging you guys, like we got to get some big wins because some people are not happy with me and what I've been able to turn in the last couple of years. staying down south, we have number 2 Georgia hosting UAB. You can catch this one on ESPN2 at 3:30 Eastern. Line is Georgia minus 24.5 with the over under at 46. Look, this Georgia team is incredibly good, in my opinion. College football playoff shoe in good, defensively in particular. I think they're going to give UAB a lot of problems. As high as I am on UAB within the context of Conference USA, I think they need to come out of this game just keeping everybody healthy and get that check for 1.8 mil in the bank immediately.
I would love to sit here and pick UAB like I picked UAB over UM last year. Of course, that win didn't happen, but Georgia's too good. Give me the Dogs.
We're in agreement on that one then. And then we have FAU playing Georgia Southern at home, 3:30 Eastern. I believe that one's just on local TV. FAU favored by 7 heading into that one. Look, the Owls are favored by only a touchdown, but I think they win by more than that. We saw Georgia Southern struggle at times as they beat FCS Gardner-Webb in the opener. If FAU shuts down Georgia Southern's running back Logan Wright, I don't think they have too many problems. Also, FAU needs to be more efficient on third down this time around and take care of the ball. I don't know that I talked much about that when we recapped their loss to Florida, but those are the two things I think they really need to improve on.
Yeah, when looking at this game, Joe, and just remember, this is a Georgia Southern team that beat FAU last year. You're going against a very unique offense, Joe. How many times have you and I talked about on this podcast that you're going to face that flex bone, triple option, wishbone type of offense? And it's so hard to prepare for when you only see it once a year. I think it's so much easier to prepare for it, when you have it the opening game of the year, right? Because then you can spend all summer and all offseason focusing on that offense, and you go back to normal. But when you have to have a one-week shift, and say, all right, guys, forget everything we've been trying to teach you about every other offense you're going to face this year. Learn this. Granted, FAU played them last year, so a lot of those guys who are part of that defense are going to have some experience. But keep an eye on this game. Georgia Southern, they're starting Cameron Newsom at quarterback, and I know that name because he's a former Armwood Hawk. I almost forgot the logo, the mascot out here from Tampa, Florida, one of the premier programs in the state of Florida. So he's a freshman and is taking over for Georgia Southern, who had some quarterback issues in the offseason as far as graduating some guys and some guys getting suspended. I think it's going to be a very tight ball game, but just because of the youth that quarterback there with Cam Ransom, I just think that FAU, if there's any shot at really them kind of living up to their potential, they need to get this win because it can ill afford to go 0-2, especially against a team like Georgia Southern, who they lost to last year.
Completely agree there. With that, let's talk about Charlotte hosting Gardner-Webb, the team that Georgia Southern just barely beat last week. I don't have too much to say about this one. Charlotte's for real. They're playing another night game at home. That one kicks at 6 o'clock Eastern. You can catch it on ESPN3. And look, they should have no problem with this Gardner-Webb team if they can keep Bailey Fisher, Gardner-Webb's quarterback, in check, which the Charlotte D-line is more than capable of doing.
Yeah, Joe, they beat Gardner-Webb 49-28 last year, and I think this is a better team than, obviously, I think they beat them in 2019, 49-28, and this is a better team than they had last year, probably similar to that team in 2019 as far as how they look, so give me the Niners.
And then we have UTSA hosting Lamar at 6 o'clock Eastern as well on ESPN3. Runners coming off of one of the biggest wins in program history at Illinois, as we talked about. The Alamo Dome is going to be rocking. Should be a pretty easy encore for UTSA. So I don't have too much to say about this one. Like we talked about, if Frank Harris is able to stay healthy and continue to be like one of the main features of this offense, then UTSA is pretty much unstoppable, including, within the context of the G5 and definitely against an FCS foe like Lamar.
I think this game will be a great building block for Frank Harris coming off of the performance that I mentioned, 280 yards against a Big Ten opponent, to go out there and not only continue to develop as a passer, but maybe, put up 100 yards as a rusher, right? Really get yourself going and get into the groove of this year. Give me UTSA.
Absolutely agree. I'm nervous to encourage Frank Harris to run more, given what I was talking about earlier with just like staring at his knees. Like, it's like watching anytime you have somebody coming back from that severe of a knee injury, it's like watching like a really close game of Jenga. You know what I mean? Like, is it going to fall? Is it going to it's the same level of nerve wracking, in my opinion. But then we have Marshall hosting North Carolina Central. You can catch that one on ESPN+. Kick is at 6:30 Eastern. Look, as good as their win against Navy was, they need Grant Wells to be more accurate. I'm not worried about this game for Marshall by any means, but the Eagles are a team that can surprise you if you go to sleep on them. That's how they beat Alcorn State in their opener. So if Marshall fixes the turnovers and their running game continues the momentum that they built in the Navy win, they'll be fine.
Going to keep it short and sweet, Joe. Just want to see Grant Wells play good football, not turn the football over. Two things he hasn't been able to do coming up his last, four performances. So give me the Herd and just want to see Grant Wells progress.
Yeah, and then in Houston, we have Rice facing the University of Houston on CBS Sports Network with kick at 6:30. With this one, Houston favored by 8. I'm pretty surprised it's not more. If I was a betting man, I would take that like we were just talking about. I think Rice showed a lot of made progress in that loss to Arkansas, like we talked about. And this is something of a down year for Houston, at least by their standards. But I think Houston wins this one because of Clayton Tuney. But I think it's going to be an entertaining game. The over-under is set at 54. So we'll see what happens in East Texas.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Clayton Tuney there is one of the better quarterbacks in the American Conference. And they got guys like Mullah Bakar, which feels like he's been playing football for 10 years. I remember when he transferred to Houston. So give me the Cougars. It's a tough break for Rice. Why I'm predicting to go 0-2 with them losing this game. But we'll see. I mean, it's going to really show what the program's going to be able to do if they can bounce back from these two games. But I do think Houston will get the victory.
Then we have Florida International hosting Texas State on ESPN+ with kick at 7 Eastern. With this game, Texas State lost to Baylor by 9 last week. Jake Spavadal has that program on the right track, but I think FIU is a safe pick here. Again, game talk, FIU is only by 1 point heading into this game with the over-under set at 55.5. So I would look at that. But yeah, I think the Panthers are a safe bet in this one, especially if Devontae Price keeps up what he, started doing last week.
Texas State allowed 224.6 yards per game last year on the ground. Devontae Price is going to have a big game. I think the rest of the running backs will as well. But, Joe, I am not so confident that this is going to be an easy victory for the Panthers. And let's not, kind of bury the storylines here. There are a lot of storylines heading into this game. The Everett Withers Bowl. Everett Withers, current FIU defensive coordinator, led the Bobcats for 3 years, had a 5-28 record in his 3 years where he was dismissed 11 games of the 2018 season. His replacement in Jake Spavital, only one game better than him through the same period of time in terms of 21 games. So listen, this is one for Texas State that Jake Spavital is like, hey, I got my brother's defensive coordinator. He's been here 3 years. We try and do everything, and I'm going up against my old replacement, and I need a bowl. I need to get to a bowl. I need a winning season. You don't want to start 0-2. Two teams who are in desperate need of good starts. So I'm going to take the Panthers, but I definitely think this is one that Texas State, when you talk about the old adage, like this team cannot afford to lose, for Jake Spavital, it could get ugly in San Marcos if you lose to the guy who you replaced.
Very solid point. Like, that definitely adds some added intrigue to the game when you're talking about facing your old replacement with Jake Spavital going up against Everett Withers. And then we have Louisiana Tech facing FCS's Southeast Louisiana. You can catch that one on ESPN3 with kick set for 7 o'clock Eastern. With this one, Louisiana Tech are a safe pick here, I think. We saw how Austin Kendall runs that offense. I think this team's got, again, the grit that they need to make the rest for CUSA West interesting. This Southeast Louisiana team can score a lot of points through the air if you're not careful, so the Bulldogs will have to tighten that pass defense a little bit. We saw them kind of crumble against Mississippi State in the fourth quarter in that regard. But ultimately, I think they come through with the win here, the Texters do.
With apologies to Southeast Louisiana, I believe they're the Lions, if memory serves me correct. Joe, they always remind me of the old, like, FCS Southeast when you played NCAA football, you know, in the FCS Midwest, yeah. the unnamed FCS team. That's always who they remind me of. So apologies to the Lions, but I just had to get that wisecrack out. Now, give me Tech. I think this would be a great game for Austin Kendall to build on as he really tries to, you know, take that starting role and make it his. As you mentioned, Luke Anthony and his recovery still a work in progress, and Aaron Allen is the number two. So definitely a good game for Luke Anthony and that defense to really break out. So give me the Bulldogs.
And then let's move on to a rivalry game up in North Texas, SMU hosting the North Texas Mean Green at 7 o'clock Eastern on ESPN+. With this game, a lot of energy going into it, given the rivalry, but SMU favorites by 22.5. The Ponies' fast-paced offense put up 56 on Abilene Christian last week. I think both of these teams score quite a bit, but ultimately SMU are going to get more stops than North Texas in this game, and that's why I'm picking the Mustangs.
Joe, one of my favorite rivalries, one that, as we had Brett Vito on in the offseason, talked about, it's the rich kids and all their money and their cars versus, you know, the good old kids who go to UNT, the public school, right? Unfortunately, in this case, or unfortunately for Conference USA fans, I should say, not that I have anything against SMU, give me the Ponies. I think there's more well-equipped to get this game. Not that I don't think that North Texas can't put up a fight, but I do think SMU will get the win here.
And then we have Old Dominion hosting Hampton at 7 o'clock on ESPN3 from SB Ballard's Norfolk. I think Old Dominion wins this game. Hampton are by no means a bad team, but I think this Old Dominion, this game is Old Dominion's best chance at a win all year, and I'd like to think they're not going to let that slip away.
Listen, the Pirates of Hampton, again, they are no slouch. They're kind of one of those blue blood traditional HBCUs that I've talked about, like Bethune-Cookman. But I do think all in all, ODU is just more talented. They're returning to SB Ballard Stadium. Return to football. That crowd in Norfolk is going to be fired up. That's actually a game I'm going to want to get my eyes on, of course, after the fact, because I'll be at FIU Stadium covering the Panthers. But give me the Monarchs, and I don't think it'll be close. I just think they're going to come out too fired up and ready to not disappoint that home crowd after a year away.
And then to wrap things up, we have Southern Miss hosting Grambling at 7 o'clock on ESPN3 in Hattiesburg. And with this one, the Southern Miss just needs to show some signs of life, in my opinion. Grambling's offense is not as high-powered of the lot as a lot of the other FCS teams that we've talked about just in this episode. So if the Golden Eagles can't get this done at home, that's a problem. But, you know, look, as we talked about, I think they have a lot of the weapons, but the execution just has to be better than what we saw last week against South Alabama.
Sure, absolutely. And it seems like I'm just repeating myself when I talk about traditional HBCUs. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Grambling. It's one of those programs. But all in all, Southern Miss is just way more talented. I think Frank Gore Jr. alone should be able to put up a performance that should get Southern Miss to win. So just want to see them build upon, not last week, because I hope they throw last week completely out the door, but build upon last year, some of the late season success they had in terms of beating FAU. Want to see them kind of, you know, get back to that type of momentum against Grambling and get the W.
In the words of Ted Lasso, be a goldfish. Which, have you watched that yet, Eric, by the way? And I don't know if you're a soccer guy or not.
I am a soccer guy, but I have not seen Lasso.
Okay. Once you watch it, you'll kind of understand why. Healy reminds me a lot of him. I don't know if anybody else had that kind of feeling that's listening when, if anybody watched Ted Lasso and then kind of watched a lot of like Healy's press availability after the Duke win, especially, but there's a lot of similarities, honestly. So it's worth your time. It's worth your time. With that, then we'll say once again, thank you so much for listening to all of you that are, you know, in the aftermath of the tropical storm and all that. Once again, we say, you know, stay safe and hope everything gets back to normal for you sooner rather than later. Thanks as always to Taylor Bauer, who keeps us sounding good. Hopefully we'll have him back soon, and he's in our thoughts as well. With that, we'll be back next week to talk about some more pretty exciting matchups for CUSA, and hopefully for the sake of this conference, the momentum stays up. Happy football watching, everybody. We will talk to you very soon.